So there was a problem with the audio. Everyone knows it. The S's were bad. The compression was bad. I'm not an audio professional. I have no freaking idea. But what I do know is what sounds good and what sounds all right. So I've used the same thing for a year. It's never done what it did last week. It did some crazy stuff. And I was like, yep, we got to address it. So Alex here, being the kind sport and co-host he is, helped me for about 4 hours over 2 days to figure out how to make the audio sound this nice.
Help. I really didn't do much. I just sat here. I looked up some stuff.
I would say it's decent enough. For some reason, I will say that my my gain is a little higher than yours. We're going to turn down the gain just a little so we can stay in that peaking range so that it doesn't go up to the red, because peaking will blow up people's ears. Welcome back to During Business Hours. We just spent 4 to 5 hours trying to fix the audio on this. It has been a nightmare. Rodecaster is just trying to get me to buy their new Rodecaster Pro 2 deck. I know that's the way they're trying to do it, because otherwise, what would be the point of causing that much trouble?
You didn't just say, like, man, F this. I'm just going to buy the Rodecaster Pro 2.
Yeah, because then that's, what is it, $700?
Can't you sell this?
I could, but who's going to buy it?
I don't know. Somebody else is going to start a podcast. At least you can sell the other thing, right?
$599 refurbished, $699 new. Let's just say used. Okay, so I can sell it for quite a bit. Fuck. I got the box and everything.
Man, after this entire time of working on our audio, come to realize we could
I still got to set it on the Rodecaster Pro 2 anyway. That's the problem. No matter what. There's so many people selling these things because a lot of people have quit their podcasts or quit doing. I enjoy doing this. I don't care if one person watches it or 40 or 500 or 3,000 like the P. Diddy one. But I enjoy sitting down and about certain things that I love about.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do. This is my vent. This is so I can be so nice to my customers face to face or over the phone. You're welcome.
You know, it's funny. I actually had a conversation with one of my patients. I was like, yeah, you know, I'm on a podcast with my buddy Chris. And he vents a lot about, you know, how his customers give him like a whole bunch of grief and stuff. And he asked me almost every single time that we're on the podcast, like, well, like, how about your patients? Like, have you got any crazy ones? And I'm like, well, you know, really, I don't really have that many crazy patients.
You're in the perfect industry to not have like lunacy because you have a needle to their throat.
Arm.
Well, close enough. You have sharp things that can harm them. Same way you don't curse out your surgeon.
Though for legal reasons, I would never do anything.
Yeah. Everything that's said here is a hypothetical or, you know, manifestation of dreams versus reality.
Yeah. It's not like.
But I thought something, we're going to talk about something strange today because I really went down the rabbit hole of like how people such as yourself or anyone else make money in America.
Mm-hmm.
And like I was watching an old show. Came up called How to Make It in America back in like 2011. It was a great show about some guys in New York that came up with a idea for a bootleg jeans company. Like, oh, wait, we're going to buy these bootlegs, but then rebrand them as our own brand and call it Bootleg Jeans. And it took off and then everyone was trying to get them down. Stuff got stolen. Cops kind of busted it saying you're infringing on other IP. And it's just everything put boots on their neck to try and make it in America. And their whole thing was like, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case for New York anymore. As most of you know, New York is a shit show. Financially, biblically, it is Sodom and Gomorrah out there. It is nuts. You can't make it. The guy can't even sell a dollar piece of pizza without getting a citation from the government saying, you are underbidding your competition in some way. You need to raise your price.
Seriously?
Yeah. There was a place called Dollar Pizza that got shut down right after 2020 because it would sell like giant pizza slices for a buck.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got bitched at, then they got fines, and then just boot to the neck. It was real Gestapo-like.
That's horrible. I remember I went to New York once, and I don't know if it's the same place, but we went to a pizza place that sold pretty heavy slices for a dollar.
Yeah. That was the best place ever.
Yeah.
I think Casey Neistat had him in his videos.
Mm-hmm.
He went there a lot and like lived off that place for a while before making $50 million off of his beam sale. But I kept doing these like little rabbit holes out. People started their businesses and got crushed by the government. And Tucker 48, have you ever heard of it?
Mm-mm.
So in 1947, I think, a man named, I'm going to look this up so I don't butcher this.
Tucker 48 sedan.
A guy named Preston Tucker. While in Michigan, briefly produced in Chicago, Illinois, 51 cars that were made, including a prototype for a company that was forced to declare bankruptcy and cease all operations in March 3rd of 1949 due to negative publicity by the news media and a SEC commission's investigation. Basically, at the end of it, he was found not guilty, acquitted of all charges, but it was the government that tried to buy up all the IP and got demolished because he wouldn't stop selling cars or trying to make cars. Because there was only Ford back then and Chrysler and GM or whoever. So the big three, which was apparently he suspected that the big three automakers, Michigan Senator Homer S. Ferguson, had a role in the Tucker Corporation demise. But imagine for 2 or 3 years, you make a car that is not only safer, but nicer and cheaper than the big three. And you take donations so that you can make your car. And apparently he was doing it legally. And it turns out he got a full-fledged investigation from the Securities Commission levied against him.
Because these big car companies are probably like lobbying the government and were like, yeah, you know, we'll give you more money if you deal with this guy.
Yeah, there's apparently a movie called Tucker, The Man in His Dream, based on the saga and the car production by Francis Ford Coppola. And I saw a clip of that a long time ago. I didn't know it was part of this movie. The Torpedo was actually a prototype of his car used for the production model. And on the inside, it was just black, like plastic bags over seats and stuff that you couldn't see. But one of the coolest things about the Tucker 48 that I found is the center of the windshield had like a seal, like most modern day cars, where it would pop out in an accident. Because apparently in 1946 and 1945, there were so many deaths from automobile accidents where they would strike the windshield because it was such a thick piece of glass. So it would stay in because it was put in on the inside and then basically welded in there. And so he was like, well, why don't we just make it with like a rubber seal? So if something, it just kind of flies out and then people don't die.
Right.
It was such a simple thing that they still use it to this day where the windshield is just a seal. So if a direct collision, you're safer. But I thought it was crazy. That along with the...
There probably needs to be something that makes it easier for the windshield to pop out in car crashes. Because, I mean, I don't know how many car crashes I've seen. I can't count them on my hands because I've seen so many. But that people have head injuries sustained because it ends up being... it's called like the spider effect on the windshield of like their head colliding with it. So it makes it look like a spider's web. Cause I didn't know that that's the reason why.
Yeah. But so this is the Torpedo, the original. And so this is what it looked like, where the doors would basically, open backwards, I believe. And so this car looks so futuristic.
Right.
It was crazy. And it had a removable,
steering wheel. So when it gets stolen?
Yeah, I don't know if there was a big thing about theft there, but I thought it was so freaking interesting.
Probably extra precaution. Yeah, it'd be pretty neat.
I want to know when he died.
1933.
Manufacturer responsible for the Tucker 48 saloon car produced in late 1940s and only about 50 copies. I did see that the four photo prototypes that were ever made are selling for tens of millions of dollars right now. One other cool thing, the center headlight that's on these cars, it's on this car, basically turns when you turn the wheel so that you can see around corners.
Really?
Yeah. It was the first of its kind, directly with the wind, the movement of the car, which I thought was fantastic.
Right. I think people were so inventive compared to, well, not saying that people aren't as inventive now, but like a different kind of inventive.
They don't try to invent anything new. They just recreate the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same wheel.
Like I remember seeing videos of people that had like parallel parking. Oh man, I can't even remember specifically. So like a part of this car, in order to get like into this tight fitted situation or out of a, you know, tight situation that they're like parallel parked, a wheel would come out of the back and like spin.
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And I was like, that's pretty neat.
So apparently he got married at 20 in 1923. He and his new wife, Vera, jointly took a 6-month lease for a gas station near Lincoln Park. been trying so hard. Vera manages the station during the day. Preston works on the Ford Motor Company assembly line. In the last 2 months at the service station, he began selling Studebaker cars. With the lease expired, he leaves Ford and returns to the police. In his first winter at the security forces, he's forbidden to use a torch and drill a hole in the dashboard of a vehicle to allow the engine to heat the cab. He met a car salesman, Michael Dulian, who later became a sales manager at Tucker Car Corporation. Dulian hired Tucker as a car dealer in his dealership in Detroit. He was successful very well, but the concession was far from his home in Lincoln Park, so Tucker resigns, returns to the police for the last time. A few months later, Dulian, still impressed by Tucker's immediate success as a salesman, invited him to move with him to Memphis, Tennessee. For a sales manager, Dulian was transferred a few years later, but Tucker remained in Memphis and was representative of Ivor Schmidt, Stutz, and John T. Fisher Motor Company Chrysler, where he began as general manager of sales while managing Chrysler sales to Memphis. It establishes a connection with Pierce Aero. In 33, he moved to Buffalo, New York, and became a regional sales manager for the Pierce Aero Automobiles. 2 years later, returned to Detroit and worked for Dodge as a salesman for Cass Motors. Tucker combat vehicle equipped with turrets. In late 1937, while recovering from an appendectomy, I don't know how you say that, in Indianapolis, appendectomy. In an Indianapolis hospital, Preston Tucker reads the news of war looming in Europe as his idea of developing a high-speed armored combat vehicle. In 1939, he returned with his family to Michigan, bought property in that word. There renovated an old barn, which he opened and operated as a machine and tool company, machine manufacturing plant in the aim of developing various automobile products. The opportunity of Tucker comes from the Dutch government, which wanted a combat vehicle adapted for the muddy terrain in the Netherlands. Continuing his work relationship with Harry Miller, he began designing a short wheelbase armored combat car. I didn't know this. Equipped with Packard V12 engine modified by Miller, the car is nicknamed the Tucker Tiger. At least one prototype of the battle car was built. The car should have been placed at the Rahway, New Jersey factory owned by American Armament Corporation. The Germans invaded the Netherlands the spring of 1940 before Tucker could finalize the transaction with the Dutch government, and they took no interest in it. He finished the prototypes and chose to try and sell it to the U.S. government and said that the car reached 160 kilograms per kilometers per hour, far exceeding the design specification. The U.S. military felt it was too fast and already engaged in other combat vehicles. She refused to work with Tucker. However, the extremely mobile and motorized firing turret, the Tucker combat car known as the Tucker Turtle, aroused the interest of the U.S. Navy. Harry Miller later took over some of the designs of the Tucker fighting car in the American Bantam, where he participated in the development of the first Jeep. So he inspired the first Jeep. This is all Wikipedia, so take that with a grain of salt. But yeah, shortly after the start of World War II, Preston Tucker founded the Tucker Aviation Corporation, another vehicle for the Army. He proposed it was not accepted, but made a small fortune in development of the rotary cannon turret. In 44, he launched a bold fundraising campaign to build a very innovative sedan. He called it the Tucker 48, managed to lease the Dodge Chicago Aircraft Engine Factory, which had been closed since the end of the war, but he produced about 50 copies. Trial and End of Life, it says that in 1949, the Stock Exchange Supervisory Commission, SEC, indicted Preston Tucker as many of his Tucker 48's sophisticated technical promises were not kept. Preston Tucker blamed the three big car companies, GM, Ford, and Chrysler, to sink. He was eventually exonerated, but financial difficulties put his company in liquidation. As for the future Tucker, Talisman, and Coupe, it had never went beyond the drawing board. He died on Christmas Eve in 1956 from lung cancer. They gave him cancer, too?
Damn. God.
It says Tucker's Fate from the Form of Biopic from 1988. And then Sin City, I Killed for Her by Frank Miller and Robert. The character Marv steals the Tucker 48 from Damon. Oh, I didn't know that. I've seen that movie so many times. But yeah, these are the cars. I know I've seen one of these on the road before, which is the crazy part.
I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I just wish I could see inside of it. Most of these are in freaking French for some reason. But the conspiracy theory is that not only did they bankrupt this man, but the government shut him down and stole his designs for other things.
Mm-hmm.
And not only did they sell those designs to foreign governments and, like, lease certain things, but the government made hundreds, probably of millions of dollars off of his designs post his death, because some of his designs are still implemented today.
Right.
So the idea that this man wants to build something, gets all the money fundraised, goes to it, gets exonerated, and after he fights and wins and clears his name, the media has already destroyed it. That's basically modern day social media. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's wild how many, to imagine how many times the government has done this would be astronomical. Because could you imagine nowadays with all the new technological innovations that are coming out of, you know, everywhere.
Man, what's the word to ask for this? How many business ideas has the government killed? 90% fail? Damn, I didn't know that. I didn't know it was 90. I thought it was like half, just like half people run out on their wife or a husband. According to business owners, we're talking about something else I saw here. According to business owners, reasons for failure include money running out, being in the wrong market, lack of research, bad partnerships, ineffective marketing, and not being an expert in the industry. My money runs out when I gamble too much, though, so that's a possibility.
But you haven't been gambling for a while.
True. I did send my wife on a $500 mini vacation. She was very not happy about. Yeah, she went there, and they were like, they were just turned off. Like, seriously? They didn't hit a line pay, nothing.
God, maybe she just needs to go somewhere else. Where have you guys been going?
She went to Hammond. We've been going to Canton. Canton's either good or bad. That's the only, there's only two modes, f-ing amazing or disgusting.
What about Watonga?
Too far. Yeah. That's like an hour and 10, 35 minutes down the road is Canton, 40 minutes down the road is Hammond. So,
but would it be that much out of the way if you guys hit a big in Watonga?
Yeah, but apparently this Cato Institute says the pandemic 2020 will be creating lasting changes to the economy. This is on May 15th, 2 years ago. No, that's 3 years ago. Lasting changes to the economy. More businesses will allow employees to work at home. Video conference. They got that wrong. Replace business travel in many cases. Some big cities will lose people and jobs. Yeah, some have, but that's because of drug and homelessness and violence and gangs and Kia boys.
I don't know. I was in Oregon in like October, November of 2022, and we were set up in Eugene, Oregon, and we ended up being like in an old Sony building that ended up being like the lab portion of the hospital, because the hospital was like connected to that building underground. And we were talking to some of the people that still work there, and they were like, yeah, like 85, 90% of the employees that used to work there now work from home. And this was like post of whenever people could go back to work. But they were like, it became so efficient of people just working from home and online and video conferencing everywhere.
Yeah.
That they're, I think they were trying to like integrate more lab equipment there for the workers. But in terms of like sales and other people there of like admin wise, they all worked from home.
Yeah. But see, a lot of the work from homes have been basically turned off or removed. Even my wife's company, Centene, they like removed all the bonuses, all the incentives, the referrals. And then they said, hey, 30% of you are getting laid off and the other 66.6 or whatever. It's like 33.3. You're all because you got to get approved for this, that, and the other. And now they're not paying for like home internet like they were. They've reduced it to where the CEO makes almost $1 billion more, mm-hmm. you know, or 100 million more a year. And the people are getting absolutely wrecked, because she only went back to that job because they offered an incentive, a bonus, X, Y, and Z. And now the next year it's like, well, we only need the health care for the kids. It saves us $700 a month.
Yeah.
So she really only works like 3 hours a day and then sits around and takes care of the house. And she's basically a homemaker.
Mm-hmm.
But she works a normal job because she can work with one hand, take care of the kids, do all that. She is a multitasker. But hasn't followed through on the Made by Love stuff because she's been busy with that. And she's now thinking, oh, well, if it's only $700 a month, how many soap bars is that? Reality, that's only, that'd be 20 times 7, 140 bars. No, because it'd be 4. God, my math right now. My brain doesn't work. I need water. 700.
You know, you have that big freaking canteen at home.
It's 175 bars, which is 8 batches. Not bad. 8 1/3.
Mm-hmm.
So each batch, $15. So that's one hell of a margin. It would pay, I'd have to pay $118.75 and probably 8 hours of my time to make $700.
That's not bad at all.
Not at all. But consistency.
So when did you say you needed help with this?
I can teach you how to do it anytime.
Yeah, I'm not doing anything tomorrow, so.
Yeah, tomorrow shouldn't be crazy busy because what, that's Wednesday?
Mm-hmm.
Today was slow. Thank God nobody's come to pick up. We had a big order for parts yesterday, and you know, we had a lot of money was made yesterday. I think it was close to $1,700. And it was just busy in the latter half of the day out of nowhere. Just it hit us, and then it was like go, 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 go. And
yeah,
so I was thinking of everything I could do besides this business. And like, there's times you get burnt out, especially when the seasons change and I go from like seasonal adjustment disorder in winter,
mm-hmm.
and I've like managed it by the start of spring, and then spring really kicks in and it gets hot, and it's like it's supposed to be summer at like 90 degrees. And I'm like, oh, this job, but I'm not getting paid hourly. It's my business. So I just want to go home. But then I'm like, well, it's hot at home because the AC is broken. So I'm going to stay here and sweat. America. I don't know what got me on the whole idea of like the government stealing patents and getting, you know, getting in your mouth and calling it chocolate. Apparently it's happened for 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
There was a shoemaker that came up with an insole back before cork was the big thing, and the government took it and he just disappeared. And they had like a contract, like he was selling this design to the US government.
Mm-hmm.
That was all that was left at home with his wife and kids. No payment, no signed contract. The contract was the only thing that he had done that day. And then he just gone. Government's making military boots. Like same design. Not even 2 weeks later, they got a whole factory down the road from where he worked.
That's so messed up.
All hearsay.
Right.
Never know.
It's ridiculous. There's that quote of like, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's just people in the government.
The government's been like that forever. But nowadays, it's like they entice you with grants, with free money. Like in 2020, we got
free money.
Yeah, payroll protection was a big one. And it was like, hey, let's see your bank accounts. Let's see all your info. Give it to the SBC or the SBA, and you'll get free money. And we applied. We got like 27,000 when it should have been like 90,000 because we had 5 people on the books for so long. They just wouldn't approve it because certain people were at like 4.5 months when they need to be 5 months. Some people were like 3 months when they should have been 3.5. The numbers were crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They only approved 27,000 and said, well, because you're a sole proprietor on these locations, that's all we can do. But I was like, well, I'm not even going to apply for the second because 20 grand is going to give me 2 months of payroll. Like, cool, I'll just take it, and then I don't have to pay it back, don't have to deal with it. The bank shut down. The moment we got paid, that bank, Cross River Bank, went down, never talked to us, shut down the portal, said that somebody in the SBC or the SBA would get in contact with us. Till this day, I have not received a single letter. Technically until last week. That's why I bring it up. So I got a letter saying, hey, how would you like to pay your $27,942 balance? And I'm like, it's been 4 years and you're asking me to pay something that I haven't even, no information. You gave me money, had me put in an account. I still got the account open. I pay $10 a month for, by the way, $480 I paid for that account since it was open. It's $10 a month just to keep the records of every dime I spent with that account. Because we had to pay almost $1,200 to switch our payroll to use that f-ing account.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a nightmare through Paychex and Square at the time because we had 2 locations. And so the whole stipulation was use their bookkeeping. It has to be one account. Just make sure that you're paying customer or you're paying for parts that are dire in need, employees and employee amenities. So if you had to buy like toilet paper, et cetera, that's fine. But we literally only paid payroll. And it was just every week payroll came out and we decided to do weekly because it was easier for the tracking and more of a clear number.
Mm-hmm.
And man, f- me, that that was the worst idea, because now I owe $27,000 to the SBA that they won't even call me back. They sent me a letter that was like, how would you like to pay? Reply to this letter. And then on the back side is, do not reply to this letter.
Seriously?
Yeah. So I thought it was a scam at first. And then I'm waiting for an email or something. They got all my info. They got my bank account numbers. They got everything. Call me. Like something. Super dumb.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You know, I remember seeing something on TikTok a while back of this guy talking about past government amendments that didn't make it through. And some of them were ridiculous, like wild of like, why didn't they make it through? I wonder if I can find him on TikTok so I can send him to you.
Proposed amendments not ratified by the states, 27 amendments which have been ratified by the required 3/4 of the states. 6 other amendments have been submitted. 6 other amendments to the states have not been ratified. Beginning the proposed 8th amendment, Congress had customarily included a provision requiring ratification within 7 years from the time of the submission to the states. It says the Supreme Court, Coleman v. Miller, 307 U.S. 433, 1939, declared that the question of unreasonableness of the time within which a sufficient number of states must act as a political question is determined by the Congress. In 1789, at the time of submission of the Bill of Rights, 12 pro were ratified and became the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. Proposed Articles 1 and 2 were not ratified with these 10, but 1992, Article 2 was proclaimed and ratified 203 years later. The following is a text of proposed Article 1. Article 1, after the first enumeration required for the first article of the Constitution, there shall be one representative for every 30,000 until the number shall amount to the 100, and which the proportion shall be so regulated Congress that shall be not less than 100 representatives, nor less than 100 representatives for every 40,000 persons, until the number of representatives shall amount to 200, after which the proportion shall be so regulated by Congress that there shall not be less than 200 representatives, nor more than one representative for every 50,000 persons.
That's not what I was talking about.
Okay.
It's like, I found the video of the TikTok guy, like, the 1878 amendment of an executive council of 3 to replace the office of the president. 1914 amendment of finding divorce to be illegal.
Oh, yeah, this is, it's getting to that. That was the first. That's the first. So there's 6 total. But this one, 82 after disputed Congress, extension of the original 7-year period of ratification. Equality of the rights under the shall be denied or abridged by any state or account of sex. Enforce appropriate legislation. 3 amendments shall take effect 2 years after the date of ratification. But it says here, vice president, district seat of the government, United States shall be treated as it were a state. 23rd article of amendment of the Constitution of the United States hereby repealed. And then the article in English. There's all kinds of these things. So there's 6 total, apparently.
This is like a whole list.
Okay. Article 13, which is no amendment shall be made to the Constitution which authorize the Congress to power or abolish, interfere within the state with the domestic institutions thereof, persons held by labor or service of the laws of said state. So, well, this is in a book. An attempt to abolish the United States Senate. That doesn't sound real. The forbidding religious leaders from occupying government office or receiving federal funding. That should be real. An executive council of 3 to replace the office of president. That should be real. Renaming the nation United States of the Earth. Not real. I remember that. That wasn't real. Abolishing the United States Army and Navy. Also, these are not real. These weren't actually proposed. This was like a, I remember hearing about this. Been, it was a, like War of the Worlds.
Oh, was it? It was,
you know how they went over the radio and they talked about this. That these are things people talked about doing, but never got up to the time where they had to vote on it.
I gotcha.
Like, nobody's really going to be like, abolish the Army and Navy in 1893 in the time of need before the war of 1902. 1894, acknowledge the Constitution, recognize that God and Jesus Christ is the supreme authorities in human affairs. This is a joke book, I'm telling you. 1912, making marriage between races illegal. 1914, finding divorce, because they did make races the whole thing was illegal, technically segregation, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. 1914, finding divorce to be illegal. They did do that, but that was in a different wording. 1916, all acts of war should be put to the national vote. Anyone voting yes had register as a volunteer for the service of the United States Army. That's not true. They just did the draft. Anyone who's registered as a person. All acts of war should be put to national vote. An attempt to limit the person's wealth to $1 million. They used to carry around $1 million in a note, a single note, like one piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then 10,000 was too much because they could conceal too much money while traveling. So they decided like to have that much wealth just concealed is like unreasonable. So you have to either make money shorter. That's why there's only up to $100 bill, et cetera. All acts of, what is it? An attempt to allow the American people to vote on whether or not the United States should go to war. The forbidding of drunkenness in the United States and all of its territories. 1947, the income tax minimum for individuals should not exceed 25%. 1948, the right to citizens to segregate themselves from others. I should be able to segregate myself from others. It's called my private domicile. That's it. Don't come in. I'm naked. 1971, American citizens should have the inalienable right to the environment of free of pollution. No, you don't. The earth is polluted. All kinds of shit. Like there's toxic bugs, snails, there's beetles that smell like dung. They're going to get up in your stuff. And that's why it's called a dung beetle. Yeah. Does that violate your rights? No. Dummy. Dang. That's just crazy. Once you say that out loud, most of them sound absolutely bad shit.
I thought some of those were interesting.
They are crazy. Yeah. In the second session or 2D session of the 11th Congress, the Congress proposed the following amendment to the Constitution relating to the acceptance by citizens in the United States of titles of nobility from any foreign government. The amendment, which was not ratified by 3/4 of the Senate of the states, reads as follows. Resolved by the Senate and House representatives of the United States of America, Congress assembled 2/3 of both the houses, concurring that the following section should be submitted to the legislations of the several states in which were ratified by the legislations of 3/4 of the states shall be valid and binding and part of the Constitution of the United States. If any citizens of the United States shall accept, claim, receive, or retain any title of nobility or honor, or shall, without the consent of Congress, accept and retain any present pension, office, or emolument of any kind whatever, should from any emperor, king, prince, or foreign power, such person shall cease to be a citizen of the United States and shall be incapable of holding any office, trust, or profit under them or either of them. Huh, so that didn't get passed? Oh, no, because we got, what's his name? I think Mike Myers was knighted. No, it wasn't Mike. It was some other semi-British American. During the second session of the 36th Congress, March of 1861, the following proposed amendment to the Constitution relating to slavery was signed by the president. Interesting, the note in this connection that this and the only proposed amendment in the Constitution ever signed by the president. The president's signature considered unnecessary, but because of the constitutional provision and upon the concurrence of 2/3 of both the House and the Congress proposed, shall be submitted to the United States and be ratified by 3/4 of the states. Resolved. The Senate's House, doesn't matter. Article 13, no amendment shall be made to the Constitution which authorize or give Congress the power to abolish or interfere with any state and with the domestic institutions thereof, including that the persons held to labor or service by the laws of said state. In more recent times, only 3 proposed amendments have not been ratified by 3/4 of the state. The first proposed child labor amendment, which was submitted to the states in the first session of the 68th Congress in 1924, as follows, says, Congress shall have the power to limit, regulate, prohibit the labor under 18 years of age, the power of several states impaired by this article, except that the operation of the state law shall be suspended to extent the necessary to give the effect to legislation enacted by Congress. The second proposed amendment have failed of ratification at Equal Rights Amendment, which formally died on June 30th, 1982, after a disputed congressional extension of the original 7-year period for ratification.
These are the honorary knighthoods of U.S. citizens. Former U.S. President Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. Former New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani, U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan, and entertainer Bob Hope.
And none of them should hold titles.
Honorary.
Criminals. Criminals, all of them.
Bob Hope?
Yeah.
What did Bob Hope do?
What didn't he do?
Wasn't his just for his was just for entertainment and arts.
I think he was the one. I think he was like a massive womanizer. He spoke of gay rights and gun control and got boycotted and criticized by his friends on the right. Was legendary ladies' man, book claims. Married Hope to Don Juan, who had a fling with America's sweetheart, Doris Day, in 1949. Scandalous life was unsettling.
Yo. Bob Hope was married to the same woman for more than 70 years, but that didn't stop him from carrying out dozens of secret affairs. However, in a dark twist, several of Hope's mistresses met the same disturbing fate. People have called Bob Hope the entertainer of the 20th century, and he was no less than a titan of old Hollywood. But behind the scenes of Hope's family-friendly career is a life of rivalry, scandal, and very dirty little secrets. Bob Hope's name wasn't actually Bob Hope. He was born Leslie Towns Hope in London in 1903.
Just gonna say, he got a straight name.
Hope may have taken on the name Bob as a tribute to the popular racer Bob Berman, but there's a sadder theory. Growing up, children would tease him by calling him Hope Leslie until it sounded like hopeless, spurring the name change. Hope came from modest beginnings, being the son of a stonemason and a late opera singer in a large family of seven boys. In 1908, family picked up and moved to the United States for a better life, and Hope helped to support them by taking on a series of odd jobs, including working as a busker. It might surprise you to know that the reedy Bob Hope had a very rough hobby, boxing. When he was a teenager, he decided to enter the ring under the professional boxing name Packy East. Weighing in at an astonishing 24 carats of future Oscar gold, Hope racked up 3 wins and 1 loss. Not bad for a man who spent more of his life loving than fighting. When Hope was still a young boy, he idolized the comedy legend Charlie Chaplin, like just about everybody else his age. But unlike everybody else, Hope tried to be Chaplin. Literally. During his youth in Ohio, Hope entered a Chaplin look-alike contest and came out with the top prize. It might have been a good omen, but a life-changing event was just around the corner. While making money for his family, Hope worked with one of his brothers as a lineman, clearing trees from power lines. That's when disaster struck. One day, Hope was on a tree when it began falling to the ground with him in it. Although he swung from underneath it, narrowly avoiding a potentially fatal accident, he didn't walk away unscathed. As Hope crashed to the ground, he busted up his moneymaker, his face, and only came to in the hospital. His facial injuries were so bad that the staff refused to give him a mirror for 3 whole weeks. In the end, though, it might have been the best thing to happen to him. After reconstructive surgery, his visage became even more handsome and memorable than before. With his look set, Hope started to pursue stardom with an obsessive girl. The teenager even dropped out of school, feeling that it would only hold him back, and became a successful vaudeville dancer. With the likes of popular, Hope went on to make 6 more road. And Bob Hope had rather humble beginnings. Hope only met Crosby by chance in 1932 when he was emceeing a show where Crosby was performing. Still, the pair ended up hitting it off and were each excited by the other's comedy chops, and thus began a beautiful bromance. Hope and Crosby were supposedly as close as brothers, but there was a dark side to their friendship. Apparently, Hope even once confessed that he simply didn't like Bing, and at times detested him. Hope and Bing Crosby worked together for decades in the Road 2 film franchise, but their friendship came to a tragic end. In 1977, the two were planning to join forces again on yet another Road 2 film, when Crosby passed away unexpectedly. Despite their possibly prickly relationship, Hope was so distraught at the loss of his friend that he couldn't sleep for days. Just before he made it big in Hollywood, Hope headlined with the vaudeville performance Divorced. Okay. On a public, very few people had known about their wedding in the first place. Reed and
Hope, from what I remember, he got married, cheated, affair, didn't give a shit, and then had accusations that he hush moneyed. Back then, he was a big star, and it came out like super late. Just got weird.
And he might be the only Hollywood actor who can say that he beat Tiger Woods in a round of golf. Still, Woods had a significant handicap. He was just a toddler at the time. Hope and the soon-to-be legendary golfer made an appearance together. They interpreted the gesture as a shot across the bow and backed off, squelching the Deliance. You see, loving Bob Hope was a dangerous game in more ways than one. Yes, you were dealing with a serial cheater, but an eerie curse seemed to follow him around as well. Many of Hope's mistresses passed tragically sometime after their affairs ended, with Barbara Payton, Ursula Halloran, and Rosemary Franklin all dying young from overdoses. It's hard to imagine that Hope...
Not one, not two, but three affairs before coming to air. Oh, heroin overdose. Cocaine overdose. She liked to party. I picked the party girls. No evidence of anything else, you know. Bob Hope out.
You could carry on all of these affairs.
Especially back then. I'm just saying, it was easier to kill people. There's no cameras.
That's very true.
Knowing hypothetically, you go back 40, 50 years, there's a lot of shit I could get away with. I don't think I'd be a nice person with modern day information 50 years ago.
Could definitely have done a lot of stealing.
Yeah. A lot of scheming. I'd sell the Empire State Building 3 or 4 times for a couple $1 million. I'm the owner. Look at my deed. Oh, I got the deed right here, sir. It's already ratified. You know, I'm getting this law passed in Congress right now. I'm a politician.
Kind of like it's the...
$40 million, and it'll be yours. We can put in a ratification here for this.
Catch Me If You Can movie.
Oh, I'd be so much worse. I would have went Barabons. I'm going to change out these checks for gold. Here you go. I'm just taking gold, and then I'll invest it, and then market this, do that. Bing, $100 million into $1 billion, and $1 billion. I'll just buy the Empire State Building after that.
And then if you ever do get caught, you can just work for the FBI. And
travel back to the future. If you can go one way, you're going the other.
So one-way time machine.
Without his family knowing.
I'll freeze myself.
But as it turns out, they did know. In a 1978 interview, a reporter asked his wife, Dolores Reed, if she believed Hope was 100% true blue. Reed answered, "I doubt it. I think he's perfectly human and average and all that." Having toured extensively with USO, Hope was no stranger to danger, and had stepped into active combat zones armed with nothing but his wit. At the height of the tensions between the Soviet Union and the United States, Hope set off to the motherland. Upon returning, he quipped about his great vacation. "We had a very successful trip to Russia. We made it back." Hope may have had scores.
I'm just going to say this right now. In the military, we've seen a lot of people come and go and like show themselves for a photo op or like come in and give a speech. Just one of the things of active duty military. You always see these people. Every 6 weeks, there'd be some celebration for some day. And like the Secretary of State came once, Secretary of Defense came another time. I met the president one time. It was like, cool, you know? Stupid things. Oh my God. Every single one of them had like a group of people around them, like Secret Service. And then you got all these like orders and crap. And they're just like taking pictures. Mm-hmm. You think Bob and Hope was out there in a Humvee with no protection? And they're just like, "Oh yeah, it was a vacation. I just got my wits. The Taliban didn't know, or the Japs didn't know what hit them. You know, it was great. I had my buck knife and my toothpick, and I killed 15 men. No, he was sitting there like, "Oh, we're leaving now. We got a private plane. Bee." As much money as he made.
...of lovers, but he almost never forgot about his paramours. Indeed, he even continued to support his first wife, Louise Troxell, even while he was with Dolores Reed.
Blackmail's a son of a bitch.
Entertainer sent his ex a tidy sum of money for the rest of her life. Long after, most men would have retired to their rocking chair in an assisted living community. Hope was still chasing down women, however. Get this. The actor kicked off yet another affair while he was in his 80s. This time he skipped out on the chorus girls and picked up with one of his writers, Sandy Vinger. But it seems like Hope had lost his touch. Not surprisingly, Hope's affair with Vinger didn't last long. He was, after all, a husband, a father of 4, and quite old. But it did not end happily. After their split, Vinger sued Hope for a breach of contract, claiming that the geriatric actor had agreed to support her for the rest of his life. They settled out in court. With a 69-year union, Hope's marriage to Dolores Reed lasted longer than anyone could have possibly expected, and longer than anyone
in Hollywood. She made the most money.
While most Tinseltown marriages end as a tabloid fodder in just a few years or days,
I guess you didn't expect to live that long.
The longest Hollywood marriage of all time until recently. Believe it or not, Bob Hope never won an Oscar. In fact, the entertainer of the 20th century never got so much as a nomination, even after he...
I wonder why that is. I wonder if he was the earliest version... Am I going to say it on YouTube? I don't think I can say it on YouTube. I wonder if he's, you know, Harvey, like the earliest version. Who knows? But there was all kinds of other accusations in the news about Bob Hope all the time.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's talking about all the crushes and people that died. And all. He is a scattered person.
I'm sure there's another video that actually delves deeper into
before. Yeah, there was a bunch of newspaper clippings my grandmother talked about all the time. I was like, oh, he's just the devil. Mm-hmm. He's the devil. Like, wow, oh, he's the devil. I understand.
Chinese Revolution. In 1998, with Hope well into his 90s, a strange thing happened. A newspaper accidentally released a pre-written obituary for the comedian, leading the U.S. House of Representatives to announce Hope's death while he was, in fact, still alive. Certain congressmen, some of whom Hope had entertained while touring with USO, took the news hard. Thankfully, it was only minutes before the paper corrected the error. Bob Hope was so popular, people often suggested he should run for president. Yet even though the First Lady Nancy Reagan referred to him as America's favorite clown, he was never interested. As Hope once quipped, I thought about it, but my wife said she wouldn't want to move into a smaller house. But that didn't mean Hope kept out of the Oval Office entirely. In 1948, a seemingly unpopular Harry S. Truman was facing re-election, and he'd only gotten the job in the first place after Franklin D. Roosevelt's passing. To Truman's shock, he actually won the vote, and received some sage advice from Bob Hope in the process. In a one-word congratulatory telegram, Hope told the president to unpack. Despite falling trees, questionable marriages, a flurry of affairs, and a few close calls, Hope's life was full of hope. Entertaining audiences was Hope's single focus, and he accomplished that with his wicked sense of humor. In his own words, I've seen what a laugh can do. It can transform almost phones become mobile, air travel after a centennial on July 27th, 2003. And you can bet your bottom dollar he was full of wit and great one-liners right to the end.
Well, yeah, because he was just an old apparently. But yeah, I don't even know how we got onto Bob Hope, but I just...
Because of knighthood.
I just grew up knowing he was a dirtbag.
Mm-hmm. But I had no idea who he was.
Really?
Yeah.
Never heard of Bob Hope?
I mean, I just had no idea who
he was. How many people here, if you follow to the end, have heard about Bob Hope and have thought he was just some poster boy? I want to know. I'm going to look up some clippings here.
Leave your comments or email us.
Oh, and we got to... We'll respond in a short one of these days to the emails we got.
Oh, have we?
I got two emails, yeah.
From who?
It'll be in the short. Just look at our shorts and view and share and tag us. See you next time on During Business Hours. It's During Business Hours. Back to work, you dirty little goblins.